Okay, listen, I want to get to, I've got a couple of questions here from some guys that I'm obligated to ask you for sure. And I think all in all, they're good questions and questions of interest to our audience out there. Everybody likes to play the draft game before the draft. And actually, I can't really blame them because it's a part and parcel of the old football picture, which is magic to most people, thank goodness. So they like to play the game, and everybody wants to know who won, who lost. Well, you know, we all tell them it may be 2, maybe 3 years before we know the true impact of a draft on a particular team or any number of teams. But having said that, there's still some teams that have benefited, and it's when you play the draft game, there's some that look to be in much better shape following the draft. So if we could, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. Nobody better to do it, but I know you don't particularly care to be on this spot. But who do you think had the better drafts in the league? And then I'm going to follow that up with another bad question.
Well, you know, I think there are a lot of teams that did well. Everybody pretty much stuck to the height, weight, speed measurement statistics this time around because there was so little other information available. So it looked, you know, pretty homogeneous when you broke it all down. Having said that, as you mentioned, 3 years out is the real test. And yesterday was the day to pick up the fifth-year option on first-rounders from 2018. There were 32 of them. 11 have already failed, meaning their options have not been picked up. They've been traded or cut. So, and it's going to be more than that when it's all said and done. So this is far from an exact science. Having said that, I think that the Broncos did pretty well. They got Devontae Williams, who's really an outstanding running back. Patrick Surtain, really good quarterback. Quinn Miner, who's looks like he's a promising guard, and a linebacker named Browning from Ohio State, who's got a ton of talent. He's not refined yet, but he's a real hitter. The Chargers, I thought, did well. We heard in the open they got Slater. Palmer, the wide receiver, is an interesting guy. Asante Samuel Jr., a cornerback who plays a lot like his father. And a kid named McKinney, a tight end who's got a chance to be a pretty good receiving tight end. I thought Cleveland did pretty well, too, with Greg Newsom, Owusu-Koramoah, and Anthony Swartz, who's you people know him down there. He's a real flying receiver, 4-2 guy from Auburn. So I thought those were some of the things that stood out on the AFC side. In the NFC, I thought that Washington did pretty well. Davis, the linebacker, is not a known quantity, but he's a really athletic kid who can play three downs. Sam Cosmi, I think, is going to be a pretty good prospect at tackle. St. Juice, the corner, is interesting. And a guy that I really like, Diami Brown, a wide receiver from North Carolina, averaged 20 yards per catch. So he can fly and he can catch the ball, and they needed that badly. So I thought they did well. I thought Carolina did well. J.C. Horn, the corner, he'll start for them. I think Christensen has a chance to fill the left tackle spot. Terrace Marshall played for Joe Brady at LSU, so he knows how to use him. And Tommy Trimble is a blocking machine at either fullback or tight end, and a pretty good receiver too. So I thought that was a pretty good draft. Those are the guys that kind of stand out. I also think that the 49ers did pretty well. You know, with the down-the-line picks, Aaron Banks, Thomas and Trey Sermon. He fits perfectly in their one cut downhill run game. But of course, that whole draft is going to be driven by whether or not Lance succeeds. If he succeeds, it'll be great. If he doesn't, it'll be terrible.
Well, you're not kidding. I talked about that yesterday. I think they, the biggest chance taken in the draft by far was San Francisco. It's not just one pick. My God, they traded away half their mortgage, half their future for the opportunity to make that pick. So it's be taken down after the draft if he doesn't make it. And I just have, I don't know, having been through it and watched these kids come in, and you're right, you never know if a guy's won the Heisman Trophy and you scouted him well, you never know if he's going to make it. And there are plenty of them that haven't. But here's a kid who threw 300-some-odd passes in college, less than anybody who's ever been drafted in the history of the National Football League. The level of competition could be not much better than camp football or whatever you call that. So I don't know. Now, he's a big, good-looking kid. Seems to be able to throw the ball. But, gosh, what a chance. What a chance they took. I want to ask you about a couple of teams there that you didn't mention that seem to have had a good draft if you look at the overall. And that's Miami and the Jets. In fact, I think that whole AFC East, even though it was quite obvious what Buffalo was going after, it was defensive end, offensive tackle, first four picks. But I think the Jets and Miami both had good drafts. And overall, I think New England did. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But he got the quarterback that he wanted, and he didn't have to move up or pay any price to get him, which is just amazing. But sometimes he knows a little bit more about what's going on in the back, a little like you did, Bill. And most other people know.
Well, you know, sometimes you can sit right there and let the board come to you. And in that particular case, you could have predicted, I think, that if Jones didn't go to the 49ers, then he was the guy that was going to tumble, because Fields had too much upside to sit there for long. He wasn't going to be the guy that was going to tumble all the way down. So I think Bill Belichick played the odds and he rolled seven, and good for him.
Yeah, you bet. Now I'm going to ask you for quickly, who do you think really just maybe struck out in the draft? Are there one or two teams that you think really had a bad one?
Well, the one that stands out is Houston. They didn't have any picks to begin with because they gave up a king's ransom for Laramie Tunsil. So who is a good player but not a great one? So it's both. They paid too high a price and got a player that's below the level that they paid, and it left them with only two choices. So they ended up taking Davis Mills, who's a young quarterback from Stanford with five starts, who should have come back to Stanford, but he didn't because he has a arthritic knee, and so his time in pro football is going to be limited, I think. And so he decided to come out, and they took him. I mean, he's a good quarterback, he's a good prospect, but green as grass. And Nico Collins is a power receiver from Michigan, big old, powerful guy, West Coast offense type receiver. I don't know what kind of offense they're going to run with David Culley, but he's limited in speed and maneuverability. He's really kind of a half tight end, half wide receiver. The fact that they didn't have very many picks came back to haunt them. I think that was the one that stood out for me.
Yeah, they're in Seattle and whatever. But you say, well, they didn't have many picks. Well, that's part of the game. That's a part of the whole draft strategy is you want as many picks as you possibly can have. By virtue of the fact that they didn't have them, that's their fault, not anybody else's.
For sure.
Here's one that's a question that Bill, that I think is a good question, was asked, was passed on to me to ask you. At this point in the game, there's been the draft, certainly. There's been a free agency round, and some trades have been made. They're all means of procuring talent. The only means of procuring talent in the National Football League. At this point, and there's still some to go because there's still some free agents out there. There will be some other trades made, I'm sure. But where do you see people standing, teams standing now after putting all that together, not just the draft, but what they've done in free agency, the draft, and any trades that they've made to help their talent level and put them in a position to be competitive?
Well, I think without question, New England is the clear winner there. They added, by some people's count, 8 starters. In addition, they returned 3 players who opted out last year because of COVID. So they got essentially 11 new players out of the process, and all of whom are capable of contributing at positions where they badly needed help. And then, as we just said, Jones fell to them in the draft at 15. They traded up wisely to get Barmore, who will be the inside rusher that they needed. He probably will play only in rush situations in his rookie year, and he's got the ability to contribute. And so then they took Perkins, a defensive end, who's a big old horse who has some power rush ability, which is what they want to do. They're not necessarily interested in sacking the quarterback. They want to disrupt the pocket and disrupt the timing. So I thought that they were far and away the winners. The quiet winners, I think, were a winner was Indianapolis, because they got back T.Y. Hilton and Marlon Mack. 2 guys that are really big producers for them. Both were hurt last year. T.Y. came back off injury. Marlon Mack was hurt all season, had an Achilles injury. But if you add them to what they've already got, and most people felt that they would lose them in free agency, they now have a loaded backfield and a loaded receiving core, without even thinking about Paris Campbell, who's been injured for 2 years. If he can come back healthy, they got an embarrassment of riches there. So they got lucky in the sense that those guys came back on 1-year deals, and I think they're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, you're right about Paris Campbell. My gosh, he was drafted 2 years ago. I think at the combine, he ran like a 4.2.
Yep.
Just great, great speed, and he's a legit receiver to go along with, not just a track guy.
Yes, that's right. That's right. If he's healthy, look out. I mean, they really got a lot going for him. And, of course, they traded for Carson Wentz. So that puts them in a position where they have a very viable quarterback. I don't doubt that Frank Reich will get him straightened out, and they'll be challenging.
Absolutely. There's no question about that. You know, there are two things here that are kind of interesting. I'll just throw them out, and then I'm going to ask you if you will. I'm going to impose on you. But it's interesting, Bill, that there were two things that kind of came up I've heard through the grapevine. One is that Barmore from Alabama, defensive tackle, went to Belichick. That if it had not been, and this is a quote from somebody who knows a little football, knows a good bit of football, had it not been for Saban, he probably would not have played at any other college. Saban's discipline kept him in line and kept him playing at least a certain level. They think the same thing would happen. He's lucky because he got Belichick, who will do the same up at New England. But that if he went somewhere else with maybe some other coaching staff, they might have more of a headache than they would a player. That was kind of an interesting take on Barmore, because you know those kinds of players, and there are some. You think they're going to be great players, but they're more trouble than they're worth.
That's for sure. And I know that he got plenty of discipline under Nick at Alabama. That's for certain.
Well, to continue the draft chatter a little bit, Ian, first I'm going to ask you a question. We took it up earlier, and maybe I should have waited and just made it evident with you. But all you can hear now since draft day is all this scuttlebutt with Aaron Rodgers, and he's going to leave the Packers, and Watson is not going to play for Houston, and the same is true. A lot of talk early on in Seattle. My feeling is they're out of line, that through the organizational foundation of the National Football League, which is the most successful professional league ever in the history of man, you cannot have players dictating when they're going to go, where they're going to go, and they're not going to play for their. If these three got away with it, even one of them, the onslaught is going to be unbelievable. We've already seen it in some places. My feeling is that each team should tell them, hey, if you're going to play in the National Football League, you're going to play here, or you can get on with your life's work. You're going to be a brain surgeon or a rocket scientist or whatever. Go ahead and do that and make your life complete. But you're going to play. If you're going to play, you're going to play here. I'd be interested to know how you feel about it, because there are people that say, well, players have a right to dictate this, dictate that, because a team can cut them anytime they want to and so on. That's a part of the organizational function of the National Football League. But anyway, your thoughts on that, Bill?
Well, you framed the question quite clearly. What the talking heads forget is the following. Number one, Aaron Rodgers has a valid contract with the Green Bay Packers. If Aaron Rodgers chooses not to play for the Green Bay Packers and the Packers choose not to trade him, which is their absolute right, he walks away and the Packers have no cap hit whatsoever. And Aaron Rodgers has to return all the bonus money that's been paid him. So that's one thing they don't tell you, mainly because I don't think they know. Secondly, the argument that, well, players can be cut and coaches and GMs can't is baloney. You and I are living proof of that. Secondly, the collective bargaining agreement codifies everything that's been done and all the rules that govern player movement. That was negotiated at arm's length by the NFL Management Council and the National Football League Players Association, and both groups signed off on it. And now the player mouthpieces and the agents want to get through media nonsense and noise and carrying on what they couldn't get at the bargaining table. So if a player came to me and said, either you trade me or I'm staying home, I would say, well, good luck. And by the way, we'll send you an IOU for the bonus money you need to repay us. We need the cap relief on that. And we need the money back. And you know what? The player would have no recourse, none whatsoever, because that's what the CBA says. And all of this nonsense, and that's all it is a function of the spineless NBA, where general managers, many of whom didn't play basketball but spent a lot of time studying Wall Street and economics and things like that, take the position that, well, if the player doesn't want to be here, we don't want him, and so let's get some assets back for him, never realizing that they're polluting the locker room with poison when a player is able to do that. Those are my thoughts.
No question about it. It is, well, there's something maybe you wouldn't exist, the league wouldn't exist, if they allowed that to go on. In some way, they're going to have to stop it. This deal with, in particular, with Watson, I think, because he's going to have so many players behind him. They'll be more so behind Watson than they will Rodgers. But at any rate, something's going to have to happen to stop it. But jump back.
Well, it's easy to stop. Just say no.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
We've got a contract and we're going to enforce
it. You just say no. You've got to be willing to live with whatever consequences happen. I would tell you that if they said no and the players finally realized it's a no, they would be back with their teams. Now, they may miss a few days in camp, but fine the heck out of them when they do, and make the fine stick. I'm going to jump back, Bill, to a couple of draft questions. I know you hesitate on some of this, but our listeners would like to hear a response. With the quarterbacks that were drafted, and that was a lot of the conversation and the interest, there were really eight quarterbacks. You had the big five, I guess you'd call them the five in the first round, and then you had three others, two of which I think are going to play Mills if his knee holds up. That was a heck of a pick by Houston to pick somebody just in case they didn't have Watson that could be a future starter in the league. And I think they got one in Mills if his knee holds up. But Kyle Trask and Mills, rate those guys as they look right now with the teams that drafted them. And then I'm going to ask you to pick, if you had to pick early, an offensive rookie of the year and a defensive rookie of the year.
Well, first of all, with the quarterbacks, I don't think that the kid in San Francisco is going to play right away. Jimmy G's going to play. So his first year is probably going to be like Patrick Mahomes' first year. You're going to sit, which is a good thing. In terms of Jacksonville, he'll play right away. He's played lots of games. Urban Meyer will install an offense that's similar to what he ran at Clemson. They'll have a shakedown cruise on that throughout the NFL. They're not surrounded with a lot of talent. He'll have his ups and downs. But in the end, he may still be the offensive rookie of the year simply because of all the hype that, you know, surrounds the first pick. I think Jones is probably ready to play if you needed him to, in the sense that he can get you in and out of the huddle. He can call protections. He can handle audibles, things of that nature. Again, he probably won't play well. And I would bet, given his druthers, Coach Belichick would rather have him sit for a year and learn. That's what he did with Brady. And so I think that's probably his proclivity. Now, the Ohio State kid, Coach Nagy has said we'll have a plan for him. That may mean a little exposure here and there with a specific package. It also might mean that he sits because Coach Nagy was in Kansas City when Mahomes came in as a rookie and working with Mahomes, as a matter of fact, and he sat for a full year. So it could be that Fields sits for a year there as well. I don't think any of them are really ready to play, but we think doesn't count anymore. bottom line, I think they'll all struggle. If I had to pick a defensive rookie of the year, I think I would go probably with Surtain, simply because he's pretty far along in his development, and he's playing in a system that's going to feature his abilities. But that's, you know, purely a guess. Phillips could be a factor if he can stay healthy, because he is a very natural rusher, and sack people get a lot of notoriety. But we don't know what the medical part of it is. And I think in terms of the younger ones, or the lesser known ones, let me put it that way, the lower drafted ones, I think Trask is probably capable of playing right now. Again, he's going to have some difficulty, just like they all do. And his lack of mobility will show up early, and he'll get a lot of criticism because his whole game is based on timing and delivering the ball and knowing where to go with it. And he'll struggle with that at the outset. But I think in the long run, he'll be a pretty good quarterback. Mills is so far away from having any kind of experience at all, even though he's smart. I'd worry about putting him in there, but I don't know who they play otherwise, other than Tyrod Taylor. And then Mond, I also think Mond is a good year away from being ready to play.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right. But I think Bill, is that the two that are most ready to play and have the best situation are Jones at New England, with all they will surround him with there, a good football team, great coaching, and they won't ask him to do something he can't do. They will run the football. They'll play great defense, be sound on special teams. He's going to learn an awful lot. I think he's in a good situation. Trask is in a beautiful situation. He may be able to sit there behind the greatest quarterback that ever played for another 2 years, 2 or 3 years, and learn while he's doing that. He'll learn from the best. I think Brady will be more than willing to help him because this is not a threat-type situation that's bringing a kid along that they really don't have a significant backup. So I think that's gonna help the situation there. So those two, I think Jones is the most game-ready of all the quarterbacks, including Trevor Lawrence. Right now, if you had to put a guy in and play and surround him with what they can surround him with, the protection that I just mentioned overall, what I just mentioned, and put him in and let him play would be Jones at New England. I've seen that all along. I just really feel like he's ready to go.
Yeah, I think that, well, that's sound logic. I don't know what they do with Cam Newton. He's really not suited to be a backup, but we'll see. It'll be interesting. That's going to be an interesting preseason to take a look at. It'll be different, markedly different than what they've done in the past. But that's this whole year has been for them. So.
Well, Cam Newton is markedly different from anything that even resembles New England's past. So I don't think that they're going to be too concerned about that one. Let me ask one other quick question here. The Rams and Detroit trade of quarterbacks. How do you see that turning out? I've got a suspicion about it, but I want to hear what you have to say about that trade of the Rams and Detroit.
Well, in the Rams situation, I think it's an upgrade. The question is going to be, A, could Stafford stay healthy? You know, he's on in years a little bit, and he's had some nicks. And B, do they have enough creativity in the offense to allow him to do his thing? Because he has much more versatility in his passing talent than does Goff. So they're going to have to do a little bit more, you know, to get the max out of him. I don't think you just plug him in and play exactly the way they played with Goff. But it's going to be interesting to see. Now, in Goff's case in Detroit, you know, I'm puzzled by the whole thing, to be quite honest with you. They take offensive and defensive linemen when they don't have any receivers. How does that help the quarterback? I don't get that. And I don't think it may be that they don't care. It may be that that they're going to turn into Baltimore, and that's the way they want to play. And they don't care what the passing game necessarily looks like. They know that Goff is limited because the general manager came from the Rams, so he knows exactly what limitations Goff has and what caused the Rams to unload him. And it may well be that until they get themselves dug out of the hole that the last administration put them in, they may be doing nothing more than just pounding the ball like Baltimore.
Yeah. Well, Bill, that's interesting. I would agree with you. It's going to be very, very interesting, those two teams. Listen, we're gonna have to run, but I can't thank you enough, my friend, for coming on and being on with us now twice here to comment on this draft and all that's going on. Thank you, Bill.
You're welcome, Kay. Anytime.